live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
A lot to recap when it comes to college football. A ton to recap. And at the same time, almost nothing at all. Because in reality, college football is just Clemson and Alabama. Alabama and Clemson. That's it. That's it. Now, I will say this. Texas is back. I said it on Twitter last night, and I do mean it. A Sugar Bowl win in prime time. That's back. Coming in is a nearly 2-TD underdog to Georgia and hammering them in a statement game. That's back. Your mascot, Bevo, busting through a barricade and nearly steamrolling the opposing mascot before the game. That's also back. And I've got thoughts on that matchup later on. A 10-win season with wins over two of the top five teams in college football, that's back. Tom Herman, he's got this thing moving. And you actually get the sense that they're only scratching the surface. That they didn't just beat Georgia, they beat them up. That's back. They're still not even firing on all cylinders, and they're already coming up with wins like that. So yes, they're back. Texas is back. People have been asking for quite some time, are they back? Are they back? Maybe not before, but they are now. They're back. One more thing about that game, too. Remember when Georgia honks and Georgia players lost their collective bleep over being left out of the college football playoff and how they droned on and on about how badly the committee had jammed them up? Then you go out and you get knocked the hell out. You probably want that one back, don't you, Georgia honks? And don't tell me that you had nothing to play for, because you did. You had a chance to make your point on a big stage. You had a chance to send a message. But the only message that you delivered was that the committee did, in fact, get it right. You can't complain that you're one of the four best teams in the country, spend an entire month talking about it, only to fire it right back up on Twitter while clowning the teams that did make it in, and then get hammered the way you did last night. You see, it doesn't work like that. And it's embarrassing, and it's a really, really bad look. You think the committee screwed you. You think you deserve to be in the playoff. Then show the hell up. And then show out. Instead, you got knocked out. Period. But it wasn't only Georgia. Ohio State fans had a whole lot to say about getting left out of the playoff, too. But unlike Georgia, they handled their stuff in a 28-23 win over Washington. Sort of. They damn near did blow that huge lead against Washington in the second half. And by the way, how did that backdoor cover taste? I'm guessing like a crap Sando. The worst crap Sando of the bowl season, if you're into that sort of thing. But the Buckeyes, they don't care about how much money they cost you. They weren't looking to cover, just a win. And they did. And if Urb Meyer was the person who Urb Meyer thinks he is and tells everybody he is, that Rose Bowl win would have been a really special moment. And not only for Urb, but for the entire sport. You see, if he was the leader and the molder of men that he claims to be, the fact that he's stepping down in part or in whole due to health concerns would be pretty freaking sad, right? A guy in his prime, doing what he loves to do, and doing it at a very high level, but having to walk away because of physical issues. Because the stress of the game had taken its toll. You see, if this guy were even half the dude that he thinks he is, that would be your storyline, and that'd be really sad. Except he's not that guy. He's not that person. Nowhere near it. And the fact that he wins a Rose Bowl in the same season that he was suspended for three games for failing to properly handle allegations of domestic violence by one of his staff members is a part of his legacy. It's a huge part of his legacy. He may think it doesn't matter. Hell, I mean, this guy walks around like it never even happened. Just like those 30-plus arrests at Florida never even happened. Herb is walking around like he's somehow the victim. You see, wins cover and erase a lot of things, but not this. At least they shouldn't. Damn good coach. Damn good coach and a total fraud. So don't fall for the baggy reflections that came after that Rose Bowl. And certainly do not fall for that joke of an idea that he'll teach a class on leadership and character. I mean, I don't know if he's done coaching forever, and I really don't care. because the guy's an unrepentant, unremorseful fraud. And any school that hires Herb knows that. And by the way, does anybody anywhere really think this guy's done coaching? I mean, come on. Oh, and Buckeye fans. Buckeye fans who felt like last night and Saturday night justified their complaints about not making the playoff. Let me remind you, Purdue beat you by 29, and then Purdue lost their bowl game to Auburn by like a million. Nobody wants to hear it, Buckeye fan. But, as much as last night was about Texas and Ohio State, really all of college football is about one thing and one thing only. Alabama, Clemson, 4. Saturday night started with Clemson and Notre Dame feeling each other out, each team trying to figure out the other. And at the end of the first quarter, it was tied at 3. And then for a moment, it looked like we were going to have the rarest of things, a competitive college football semifinal. And then Notre Dame's All-American corner, Julian Love, gets injured in the second quarter. Clemson scores 20, ball game, thanks for coming, same as it ever was. And then it was time for everybody to clown Notre Dame for not belonging in the college football playoff. Same as that ever was. Until Oklahoma promptly went out and they fell behind 28-0 in the first 17 minutes of the second semifinal. You know, the most exciting offense, led by a Heisman Trophy winner, getting absolutely hammered by Bama. Kyler Murray sacked twice before he was able to get off his first pass. And he did not complete a pass until they were down 21-0. So, the problem is not that college football doesn't have an 8-team playoff. The problem is that college football has a 2-team playoff. There's Alabama and Clemson, and then there's everybody else. And while everybody else wants to claim that they've got a shot, they don't. Ohio State forfeited their shot when they got hammered by Purdue. Georgia's best claim that they belonged was that they nearly beat Alabama twice, but it found a way to lose both times. Then they went out and they got destroyed by Texas. People tried to talk themselves into believing that Oklahoma had a shot with their offense, and they got crushed. Instead of turning it into a shootout, they got boat raced. Notre Dame looked like they might have a chance when Dexter Lawrence was suspended, but Clemson simply replaced one future NFL D lineman with another, and they still dominated on defense. So that's how it is. And even worse, when you look at their rosters, neither Bama nor Clemson are going anywhere. So, you may as well get used to it. Why don't we, in fact, just fast forward to the title game on Monday and then wash, rinse, repeat, and we'll see y'all right back here in 2020. JLC, Jason Lockenfora. Jason, brother, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, brother. Hope you are well.
I'm doing great, man. How about you? How are things?
I'm busy but good. You know, it's a wacky week in the wacky NFL, but that's what we're here for.
You're right. You are busy. Let's jump right into it. A lot to get to, but I want to start with Antonio Brown. Jason, in a nutshell, how would you sum up the last week for Antonio Brown and the Steelers?
Dysfunctional, but unfortunately not in a vacuum, in a cauldron of dysfunction that's been boiling over really since training camp. The first time he sort of went AWOL on the team and went back to Pittsburgh, and yeah, there was kind of sort of an injury then, there maybe, I guess, possibly, but he basically was upset that Mike Tomlin sent some of his buddies, his sort of social media guy and his personal nutritionist, and like some dude who took pictures of him, and Tomlin was like, yeah, those guys can't just roam around the field like they have been. And he got mad about that. And then he had the blow up in the, whatever, 3-4 weeks into the season, 2 weeks, whatever it was, in September with Ben on the sidelines. And then he didn't show up to work the next day after that. And then now, you know, he has this latest thing at the end of the year where, yeah, there was something going on there injury-wise, but, you know, as Mike Tomlin says, there was a lack of communication, and he basically lost contact with Brown for a day. And then Brown's agent called and said, hey, he can play. And Tomlin said, that's not how it works. So they've got some things to mend there. I am told unequivocally that Antonio Brown has expressed to the Steelers that he wants a trade. I'm told it wasn't a demand. It wasn't, I will never play a down for you again the rest of my life, and I'll sit out if I have to. But it was, I don't want to be here. I'd like for you to trade me. Go see what you can get from me. I'm not comfortable with the situation here. He has issues with Tomlin. He has issues with Roethlisberger. But he also has a $21 million cap hit that would come from any trade. So a lot to unpack here, Jim, but I don't see the Rooneys capitulating anytime soon. There's certainly going to have to be a lot of kumbaya between the coach and the wide receiver and the quarterback. We'll see if there's any staff changes to the offensive staff at an assistant coach level. And we'll see if they can make this work. But clearly there's going to have to be more discipline moving forward, I think, because the first time Brown finally didn't play, it took, you know, multiple instances before we reached that point. Every other time things went off the rails this year, he kind of came back, you know, a day later, 2 days later, whatever, and it was kind of business as usual.
Jason Locken for joining us. That was such a good answer. There's almost nothing left for me to follow with except the bottom line. How likely is it then that he is with the Steelers next season?
I mean, again, this is all sort of playing out in real time, but my sense from inside that organization has been that it's very unlikely they meet this trade demand. As a practical matter, from a cap standpoint, it's difficult. They're still trying to win there with you know, the nucleus of this team together, and they've had to deal with some different personalities and interesting characters over the years, and they've generally found a way to make it work. So I don't think anybody's panicking there. But they're also realists, and they know that this drama isn't going to die down just yet, and they're going to, you know, they're going to have to sort some things out as human beings.
Jason Locken, for my guest, an NFL insider for CBS Sports. All right, so looking ahead, you've got 8 head coaches, Jason, who were fired either during the season or at the end of the season. As you look at those 8, what kind of thoughts do you have? What's that mean?
You know, I think this is a wide open field. You know, I think it is an entirely wide open field, and both conferences, these games this weekend could go a long way to settling who wins it. I think Seattle, in particular, and the NFC could do some damage if they get past Dallas. I think whoever wins that Baltimore Chargers game will have a template there that could help them be successful against other teams ranked higher than them in that field. You know, it's just going to be really interesting. I mean, New England, I don't think they're the same team, but getting that bye was massive. Getting that extra rest and knowing they get a home game is huge. You know, and how some of these teams that weren't particularly great down the stretch, Kansas City and the Rams in particular, are they able to get it back in peak form after this week of rest? Or did some of the, you know, potential ailments we saw down the stretch, do they manifest themselves again?
Jason Lockenfora joining us. You know, when you look at the matchups, if I were to told you back in late September that the Texans would be hosting a playoff game against the Colts, what would you have said then?
I'll have some of what you're having. You know what I mean?
Right.
Give me 2 of those and wake me up in the morning. Yeah, you go back to when they played that their first game. And the 4th and 2 that, you know, Frank Reich went for, and Andrew Luck threw the pass a little low, and then O'Brien, who was playing the tie, got bailed out, and they kick a field goal, and the Colts are spiraling, and Houston finally wins the game, but you're kind of looking at both those teams saying they have a ways to go. Certainly, for it to play out the way it did, and Jacksonville to basically stop playing football for about 9 to 10 weeks and just beat each other up or scream at each other or do whatever they do on a daily basis, it's a wild season. And that division really was fairly bonkers. But I will say this. I loved what I saw the Colts in training camp. I thought the offense was going to be prolific. And I didn't think much of the defense. But the pass rush started showing early, Jim, and it looked like they're going to be better than people thought. Did I think they'd be in the playoffs? No, but I thought they could be around 500. It turns out they're better than that.
I love this weekend. I love the matchups. And then on Sunday, you've got the Chargers going to Baltimore. Right after the draft, you and I spoke, and you talked about Lamar Jackson, and you called your shot back then saying that he was going to mean not just a lot to the offense, but to the entire Ravens organization. What did you see in him that made you feel that way?
Well, it's just so markedly different from anything the Ravens had done in a long, long time. I mean, trading back into the first round for an offensive player, don't really do it. They draft, they look at their recent drafts. It's been defense heavy. Taking a quarterback when they still had one who was under contract and they were bound with him for at least another year. You know, 2019 was always probably going to be the exit date for Flacco, but doing it in the manner they did was very impressive. Sending a message to their fan base that, okay, these 5-yard checkdowns and, you know, averaging 5.5 yards per pass attempt isn't going to be good enough. And we may not have the sexiest talent at the skill positions yet, but we're at least going to get this young man on the football field, and he'll be our best athlete on our football team the moment we sign him to a contract. And then just living here and seeing the malaise that had set in and how people were literally tuning this team out and saying, we've seen enough. It's not capturing our imagination. It's not coming close. Well, it's been a bit of a battle for Lamar, and people haven't been won over as quickly as I thought, but that game last week looked and felt like a playoff game, and the Week 17 game against the Bengals last year, under similar circumstances, there was nobody in the stands, and people just decided to do something else because they weren't buying what the Ravens were selling.
JLC, my guest. One final thought I've got to ask you about the Browns. To start 2019, they announced they interviewed Greg Williams for their head coaching position. How do you see that situation playing out?
I don't think the wind's blowing in his direction. Right now, could the process reach a point where they come back to him? Possibly. I'm on record as saying I wouldn't. That thing's not broke. I wouldn't try to fix it right now. But I get the sense that all the work that they've done for months on these other candidates kind of has them in a place where they're eager to see what's going on outside their building. They're going to end up talking to 8 or 9 people when it's all said and done. I know they hadn't sent the formal request in by yesterday, but I'm told Josh McDaniels is on their list. And if they do get around to formally interviewing Josh McDaniels, I think he's very well situated for that job. If they decide on a template where, hey, we really want to keep Williams as a coordinator and Freddie Kitchens as a coordinator, then maybe it's a less experienced guy who hasn't been a full-time head coach before, maybe like a Dan Campbell of the Saints or maybe an Eric Bieniemy of the Chiefs.
Jason Lockenfora appears every Sunday on the NFL Today on CBS. Of course, he's the host of Be More Opinionated, the podcast, and our first guest this year, JLC. Great to have you back. I will see you at Super Bowl, brother.
Hey, sounds good, buddy. I look forward to it.
Happy freaking New Year, y'all, and I do mean it. Happy New Year. Nothing says fresh start like starting work in the middle of the week, in the dead of winter, when the sun still sets at 2 p.m. But I didn't make the calendar. I simply abide by it. So why don't we talk about the new year for a second? Allow me to throw a lot of you or a lot at you all at once so we can properly set this thing up and make 2019 the best year in jungle history. That's my goal. That's my intent. This is what's going to happen. First things first, the theme of every new year is to start something, which is great. But before we do that, let's leave some things behind. Before we start something, let's leave a couple of things behind. For good. I mean this. I said it before I busted out for Miami. And I'm going to say it again right now. Ray Liotta's face is not jumping the year. It's just not. Have you noticed I haven't read any of that? Have you noticed I haven't mentioned it? It's not because I'm not getting it. Oh, I am. I'm just not mentioning it because we're not doing it. Don't even try it. I mean this. You can try it, but it's not getting on the show. I've already instructed the XR4TI. You bring me anything related to Ray Liotta, it's on you. I'm drawing the line right now. They know it. Now you know it. We're not doing this. If I see anything about Ray Ray's face, I'm holding the XR4TI accountable. They know. The thread is dead. It's over. Don't bring that in here. I can't control what you tweet and what you don't tweet, but I can control, for the most part, what gets on the air. That's not getting on the air. The thread is dead. I'll tell you another one. Ira's living situation, or lack thereof. Now, if the dude himself wants to call up and update me on that situation, he can, but that's it. I say those two things because this thing's got to evolve. It's got to grow. It's got to change. It's got to be something we're all proud of. New year, new us. Not new me. New year, new us. Those two threads are officially dead. Also, something else. Challenge yourself today. Challenge yourself to do something today. Challenge yourself in the next 45 minutes to do something that I'm going to play back in the 2019 year in review. This is not an easy challenge, but challenges are not supposed to be easy. That's why they're challenges. Last year, for instance, when we launched the simulcast, a bunch of legends came in early and they came in often, and I ran that all back in last year's year in review, right off the very top. In other words, something happened in our very first show that made it in the year in review. See if you can make a difference today, either on the air, on Twitter, somewhere on social. Make it compelling. Compelling enough that it lands in the year in review 12 months from right now. If not today, tomorrow works too. Speaking of challenging yourselves, I want to talk to the thousands of you that passively listen to the program every day. You know, the ones who have always kicked around the idea of, I'm going to call. Yeah, I was going to call. I almost called. Today is the day I'm going to call. Oh, I was going to call when I heard that topic. And then you never get around to it, right? You've never done it. This is the year. This is the year that you try. You've heard the best of the best. You've heard the worst of the worst. You know what works. You know what doesn't. You probably think that you can bring something original to it. Maybe you can, but you're never going to know unless you try. Every year, somebody comes into the jungle that I've never heard from, and they leave their mark. It might be you. Hell, it should be you. This is going to be the 25th year of the Smack Off. It's going to be huge. This is the year. You should do everything you can to try to be a part of it. If you're somebody who's thought like that, if you know you're never going to call or email or tweet, that's fine. But if you are one of those people who says, I know I could do better, I've always wanted to, then do it. What are you waiting for? Man, take it on. Take it on. If you suck, you'll get hammered. It's fine. But you know what? You won't die. Life will go on, and if you don't suck, you can build off of that and maybe make a run at a coveted golden ticket. But you'll never know, we'll never know, if you don't pick up the phone and at least lob me a telephone call. Pick up the phone, lob me a call. You know who you are. This is your year to come in here. Also, in the housekeeping department, we are going to move the Jim Rohn podcast drop dates back to Tuesday. It's going to be back to a Podcast Tuesday. When we had the RPO podcast, we ran the Jim Rohn podcast on Wednesday. We are moving the Jim Rohn podcast back to Tuesday. So, if you're a subscriber, and you all should be, those are going to start hitting your devices on Tuesday, starting next week on the 8th. Keep that in mind. Also, back to the new year for a minute. How was your new year? I guarantee it was not as good as CNN's Anderson Cooper. My man had himself a night. And how? He was on live TV hammering shots of tequila at the top of every hour of the broadcast with his co-host, Andy Cohen. Except Coop doesn't really drink. And he didn't need to tell me that because I gathered it from all the noises that he was making after throwing back those shots.
First one of the night. Yeah.
Delicious. I feel better already.
What was that?
Just the beginning. It was tequila.
It's our hourly toast. It's cheers toast. If you have at home. If you're driving, but feel free to toast along with us.
Absolutely. Everybody here seems to be having a great time. He's not a good drinker.
It's like burning your lungs.
Burning your lungs.
Welcome back, Times Square. It is the top of the hour.
Another tequila shot. This is number three. Cheers.
Cheers.
That felt good. That felt good. For real? Are you kidding?
I don't drink.
It's like it's medicine.
It is.
I'd
rather have NyQuil.
I don't drink. Yeah, I didn't think. My man sounded like he was doing shots of gasoline. That's the way too early leader in the clubhouse for Sound of the Year. Did you check him out? Imagine taking that guy to the bar and lining up a round, and then he starts to choke scream.
For real? Are you kidding?
I don't drink.
Someone get my man a Bud Light Orange. Now, you know he's not doing any shots this month or having any booze at all. Resident look at me knob, Adam Hawk, because once again, it's his annual dryuary where he does not touch alcohol for an entire month. Look, I've got no problem with dryuary. In fact, I respect dryuary. I have a problem, though, with somebody trying to guilt everybody around him into doing it. Hey, Hawk, why don't you just work your plan your work your plan, and let the rest of the world work theirs? I only bring this up because, of course, Hawk is soliciting people on Twitter to join him. And of all the people to take on the dryuary challenge, the last guy ever, if this is what he meant, if he wasn't being facetious, the last guy ever jumped in. If If I were to say to you, who is the last person in the jungle that you know that would accept Hawk's invitation to join him for Dryuary? Just marinate on that for a minute. Who would you think? Freaking Elk. Steve Elkington jumped in. Elk. The same Elk that would shut down bars with John Daly. The same Elk who has moonshine. The same Elk who has the greatest drinking stories ever. From the Nest in Palm Springs. From pretty much every state. Every country. Elk has the best drinking stories of anybody I know. Elk is going to experience Dryuary. Hell, Elk, if you do it, maybe I will. And then I'll hate Hawk. Good luck to you fellas. So if you had a better New Year's Eve than Anderson Cooper, or you have a more polarizing resolution than Dryuary, go ahead and hit me up. Now it's time to do it. Be great. Be great in this hour number three. Give me your best stuff. Let's set the tone for a great 2019. And on top of that, let's let all the tired jokes, let all the tired jokes and one-liners of 2018 rest peacefully back in their December graves. New year, new content, new us. New year, new content, new us. One more time. New year, new content, new us. Don't wait. Bring it.
For real?
Pete Thamel is my guest. Pete, really nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim, I'm great. How are you?
Good, really good. Pete, nice to have you back. You know, it seems pretty clear from the results that Alabama and Clemson, Pete, are head and shoulders above everybody else. Once again, let me start with Alabama. What did you make of how they showed up in their semifinal against Oklahoma? How did they look to you?
Well, I was at that Orange Bowl, and I think, Jim, from the macro, looking at college football from 30,000 feet right now, there are two programs that are an ocean apart from the other 128. And I don't really know if that trend is going to change anytime soon, even if you peek ahead a little bit. And, you know, maybe for some of your listeners and viewers who are more casual college football fans, more NFL people, like, when you watch this game, look how many young skill players Clemson have. I'm fairly confident that the two quarterbacks we'll see in this game on Monday night are going to be the number one pick in the, not this upcoming draft, but the next one in Tua. And then I guess it would be the 2021 draft. I think Trevor Lawrence will be the number one pick, Jim. So, I mean, I just think they are locked and loaded. They are recruiting machines, and they are poised for a long run of – they're amid a long run of dominance in college football already, and I don't see that trend changing in the immediate future.
All right, so Pete, you know it's going to make for a good title game. It should. But is it at all concerning to the sport overall that you've got these two teams that have separated themselves from everybody else?
I don't know if it's concerning. I'm excited for this game. Look, the last two title games, now obviously last year in the playoff was in the semis were a little bit of a clunker, but were two of the better college football games I've ever watched. And so, I mean, did people complain when the Celtics kept playing the Lakers in the finals in the 80s? I don't think so. I want to see best on best. So I don't know if it's some systemic problem with the sport. There's just, you know, two elite coaches, two elite programs, two great infrastructures, two you know, great athletic departments, great leaders, ADs at both places. I just think that there's a process in place at both these places that's better than everyone right now. And I'd say Georgia's third, despite their clunker last night. And you know, it'll be fascinating to watch how people maneuver to catch up in the immediate future.
We are talking to Pete Thamel. All right. So in terms of the game itself, Clemson, Alabama, 4. What are your early thoughts on the matchup?
I think it's going to be a high-scoring game just because of the way the offenses are structured. And the last two, quite frankly, were very high-scoring. Remember now, in the first title game matchup, Nick Saban had the onside kick because he basically couldn't stop Deshaun Watson. He had essentially conceded that there was no way they were going to stop him, and that was the only reason Alabama won that game. And then Watson won the next one on a late drive on a touchdown pass to Hunter Renfrow. So I'm expecting a similar – and I can't promise it's going to go down to the last play or last possession, but I'm expecting a similar – high-scoring, back-and-forth game, and you know, a muscle flex of two really good teams and programs. I think Clemson's definitive strength is its defensive line. I do think the Dexter Lawrence loss will show up a little bit more in this game. That's obviously the massive defensive tackle who is arguably, other than Trevor Lawrence, the best player on Clemson's roster. And I think Alabama's definitive strength is, you know, where do you start? But I do think it's the combination of Tua and just the abundance of skill. They've obviously had unbelievable receivers at Alabama. When you think about Ridley, you think about Julio Jones. I don't think like 1 to 4 plus tight end, they've had the abundance of skill, especially on the outside, that this team has. So in Tua's ability to be a point guard and kind of spread the love out a little bit, I think will be interesting. If Clemson has a weakness, it's its backside defensively.
We were talking to Pete Thamel. You know, you mentioned Tua, and I want to talk about the quarterbacks. When you look at it, and NFL future scouts, in fact, one of them told you he can really expletive throw the ball. He's accurate. He's strong-armed. He's quick. He's all of that. Some of the throws he's made this season, whoa. I mean, that's an actual quote from somebody in the NFL, a talent evaluator. When you hear them talk about Tua that way, what do you think?
Well, I'm pretty confident that Tua and Justin Herbert will go 1-2 in the draft next year. And I mean, it was the first chance I had at the Orange Bowl to see him live this season, and I was just blown away. There's an instinct and a flair there that's special, Jim. I mean, and it's so unique coming from the left side too. In that scouting piece that you mentioned that I did on Yahoo Sports last week, there are no left-handed quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, not starters, not backups. I don't think a lefty has started a game in the NFL since 2015, when old Boise friend Kellen Moore was a backup for the Cowboys. So, you know, Tua's just different, and it's just fun. I mean, every snap, you can't wait to see what he does next. So, I mean, look, and I'm gonna write this column at some point this week out there. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Tua and Trevor Lawrence are playing each other in the Super Bowl in 8 years. I just think they are two elite established talents at that position, and they're changing the paradigm of the game.
I mean, Pete, that's so weird. Think about that, what you just said. In fact, I know that there's not very much, or there aren't any left-handers, but I didn't know that one had not started an NFL game since 2015. Is that a fluke thing that it's been all right-handed since then, or is there more to it? How do you explain that?
Well, you know, the way one NFL guy explained it to me, I thought it was pretty interesting. He basically said, you know, if it's a guy like Tua or a guy like Steve Young or even like Vic and Liner, when they had their shots at NFL franchises, people are gonna obviously go all in on them. If it's a fringe guy, you actually have to change a lot strategically for a left-handed quarterback, because, you know, the blind side goes opposite and everything, the pocket you move goes opposite. So you really have to do everything you do different, if that makes sense, Jim. And I don't know if I'm doing a great job explaining it, but essentially, it's very different running an offense with a left-handed quarterback than a right-handed quarterback. So a lot of times NFL people said, if there's like a seventh-round guy and they got two guys on the board, just to not mess up sort of the mojo and the flow of how you practice and how you do things and how you run the offense, you might err towards that. And of course, the other easy answer there is, if you're left-handed and your arm's that good, you're just going to go be a relief pitcher.
Pete Thamel joining us. That does make perfect sense. All right, so there was a report this morning that Notre Dame head coach Pete Brian Kelly might be a coach of interest in the Tampa Bay Bucs search. Without getting into the details of that report, could you see Kelly leaving Notre Dame for the NFL?
You know, it's a good question. I've heard Kelly, you know, generally, not specifically, but generally linked with that Bucs job for a little while. That's sort of just been a notion that's floated out there. I did not see the report you're specifically referencing, but you know, it's an interesting time. Brian Kelly's done a really good job in his career of winning, establishing, and moving on, and this is probably his final window to move on again. So I would think it's worth exploring. Remember when Chip Kelly got the Eagles job? Chip turned it down. They went to Brian, and then they went back and got Chip. So that would have been about 5 years ago, if memory serves right. Maybe a little bit longer, actually. So the NFL is something Brian Kelly has thought about. I don't know how much more he can do at Notre Dame. He led them to two undefeated seasons and a playoff bid and a national title game. I mean, he's had a great run. That program is so much better off than where he found it. It's recruiting at a high plane. It's really, he and Jack Schwarber, KD, have really been done a great job modernizing Notre Dame and bringing them. Remember, you know, 10 years ago it used to be Notre Dame can't compete anymore. The academic standards are holding it back. There was a whole song and dance, you know, as they were sort of sputtering through the Ty Willingham, Charlie Weiss, Bob Davey type eras. And I think Brian Kelly would almost be foolish not to look. Like, it's a matter of if he wants to do it. I mean, if you do the math, Jim, you know, what are there, 8 NFL openings right now? Is that something
yes.
like that? 7,
yes.
8?
Yes.
Like, there's going to have to be a college coach. Who are they going to hire?
Right.
It's a really shallow pool in the NFL. So, you know, is it Matt Campbell? Is it Matt Rule? You know, there's a bunch of guys. It seems like Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma have put up a fence, at least for the immediate future on him. He was obviously the hottest name going for a while. So let's put it this way. By the end of this market, I would be stunned if there isn't a college guy who's tabbed.
Pete Thamel is my guest. Before you go, Pete, what about the situation in Miami? You know, Mark Richt comes back, a conquering hero, gets that thing turned around quickly, but then obviously that was kind of a mirage, right? The thing comes off the tracks, then he suddenly and somewhat shockingly announces that he's retiring. Or maybe was that not surprising to you? What was your reaction when you saw that story break?
You know, I wasn't stunned. And here's the thing with Mark Richt. I wrote this in a column on Yahoo earlier this week. Like, he had an Amazon job in Georgia, and he only got Walmart results. He was very good. He won a lot of football games. But you're now seeing Kirby Smart maximize Georgia, maximize it in recruiting, and really building it into just the monster that it should be. Mark Richt was never unable to do it. So if he generally underachieved at a blue blood program, how do you expect him to go to Miami, which has been an underachieving program, and overachieve? The hire never made sense to me. And did I think he would win 15 games in a row and then have it all fall apart or whatever it was? No. But, like, I just never thought he was going to be the guy to unlock that. And, Miami's been in a spin cycle of mediocrity right now. There's no other way to say it. I think Manny Diaz is a dynamic young coach, and I'll be really curious to see what he does on the offensive side of the ball, because clearly Miami had just been awful, awful on that side of the ball. Manny's defenses were great. Look, Manny's from Miami. He's a really, really bright young coach, and it'll be interesting to see if he can keep the momentum with the turnover chain and what they've done statistically, defensively, especially energize the offensive side of the ball the same way, and sort of unlock Miami, which nobody's been able to do in over 15 years.
He is a national college football and basketball reporter for Yahoo Sports. Pete Thamel, my guest. Pete, great to have you back. I appreciate that conversation.
Hey, Jim, thank you.
Youngstown, Ohio. First call of 2019. Jake in Youngstown. Good to have you, Jake. How are you?
Jim, happy New Year, man. What's up?
Happy New Year. What's going on, Jake?
Hey, man, these killer bees, the only thing they have killed is the culture of football in Pittsburgh. It's dead. The whole stadium on Sunday cheering for the Browns. I know it was for good reason, but put the fork in them. They're done. They're dead. It's over. You know, the cap implications, you got to get these guys out of here. It's just, I don't know what to do, but it's sad. I live right in between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, nothing but Browns and Steelers fans, and they don't know what to do. They're all so sad, and it's a bad time for the Steelers.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, Jake. Thank you very much. We go to Patrick in PA. Patrick, happy New Year. How are you?
Jim, hey, listen, first-time caller, long-time listener, 63 years old. These fellas are just not cut from the cloth of a Pittsburgh Steeler. I don't care. Look at the embarrassment they've brought upon the Rooneys, one of the finest families in all of it. And I just feel like whatever it costs to get rid of this cancer, to put the chemo to him and get him out the door. Let's start over.
Patrick in PA, my man. Happy New Year. Go ahead and rack him. Mary in Pennsylvania. Good to have you on the show.
Hi,
Mary.
Jim,
how are you?
How are you?
Great. Mary, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm a little steamed up over this Steelers situation, and I think it's just another drama from another prima donna. Same situation as Le'Veon Bell. The Rooney family doesn't deserve this, and Antonio Brown has a big ego. He cannot act like a child in this situation. He was hired to do a job. He decided not to show up. He should be fired. Swallow the money and move on, because it's going to disrupt the team for the rest of next year if they keep him.
It might. Mary, nice job. Happy New Year to you. Rack Mary. Austin Eckler is my guest. Austin, Happy New Year. Great to have you. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
Really good to have you. All right, so you're from Colorado. You went to college there, and then you were back there for Week 17 against the Broncos. Let me start right there. What was it like for you to come back to Denver and have a big game and get a big win?
Oh, you know, it was a great feeling. You know, a lot of family, a lot of support out there from obviously going to high school and college there. And so it was a great atmosphere there. And then to even get in the end zone one time, add a little cherry on top, and then get the win as well.
That's nice. All right, so tell me about this week. For instance, you're preparing for a wild card game against Baltimore on Sunday. I understand that every single NFL game is critical, but the playoffs are different. I mean, a lot of guys say we're just treating this like another game. Can you really approach it like it's another game, or does it feel that different?
I think as far as the preparation, you know, it's just like another game as far as, you know, all the details and little things there. But now it all means that much more that you do that stuff. And so it comes back to, you know, make sure you're in that routine, try to eliminate distractions because you're going home if you lose now. And so it is, in a sense, I guess, another game, but I feel like there's more at stake now. So it just heightens the importance of all your routine.
Austin Ekeler joining us. Now, I know you're focused on Sunday, but when you look back on the season, the challenges the team faced when it comes to injuries, coming back to win a number of key games, how would you describe the physical and mental toughness of this Charger team?
Oh, shit. I mean, so I say it's like our team's always been next man up, you know, like Hunter Henry going down early, bringing in and Verge stepping up and bringing back Gates, you know, like that's an example for you. Then, you know, Denzel Perryman going down and then JB stepping up, you know. We've had a lot of guys step up in spots, and then, you know, Adrian Phillips has really stepped up this year. So just the mentality is the next man up and just make your plays too. And if you're doing it for a buzz, now we got a good chemistry out here, which really helps. I feel like with, you know, when we have someone go down or something like that, because we're all in this together, we're all really tight. We got good relationships. And so, you know, it just helps your team when someone's down, you know, okay, someone else has got your back because they know what they're doing because they're just as invested as the first guy.
Chargers, Ravens coming up this weekend. Austin Ekeler is my guest. You know, you've talked about the fact that when you're playing with Melvin Gordon, as an example, he sets a really high bar. So when you watch him, what are the things that impress you the most about his game?
Just his physicality. You know, he's like 210. You know, he's not the heaviest back. You know, he's a little taller. He's elusive. You know, he's just got a full, complete game. And I just, his run after contact is what I think is the most impressive. Just watching him, you know, twist, turn, throw guys off, you know, it's just his body and his mindset allows him to do that. And that's what I really, you know, it gets me hype on the sideline when I see him dragging people and he's still going. You know, he's got a couple people on his back, and then he's just a touchdown scoring machine just down in the red zone. You know, getting the ball, he's literally just everything he's got to get in that end zone, which that mentality, you know, spreads throughout our room. And, you know, I know we appreciate it too. He plays, like you said, sets that high bar, so we know when we get on the field, hey, you got to play at this level. You can't have any drop-off, you know, so it's pushing us. And, you know, it's making us better because of it.
Austin Ekeler, my guest. You know, you talk about physicality. The one thing that keeps coming up on the team when guys talk about you is your physical strength. Phillip Rivers raves about the size of the dumbbells that you work out with. Head coach Anthony Lynn said that you are the strongest guy. Anthony Lynn said this. You're the strongest guy pound for pound on the team. Quote, it's not an opinion. That's a fact. So where does the work ethic in the weight room come from? When did that start?
I started back in high school, man. I just came to liking of working out, and I had a good group that I grew up with, and, you know, we had fun and pushed each other in the weight room, and it just became my mindset throughout college and then, you know, brought me to this point. And everyone, you know, I came in my first year, was like, oh, my God, this kid's strong. But for me, it was just me doing what I've always done. And so it was just, I don't know, maybe it's a gift that I've had or I don't know what it is, but, you know, that's kind of my thing is my strength, and I take pride in being in the weight room. I'm in there all the time, you know, 4 days a week, and so I got to keep, that's like my thing during the season, so it's my strength, and so I got to keep my strength and condition up all year.
You know, as you point out, it's also, it's not just about being strong, it's not just like vanity and looking good. As you point out, quote, I have a small frame, so people think, oh man, I'm going to light this kid up, and then then they come in for a huge hit, and you bounce right off. How much pride do you take in that, and what's their response? A tackler, a defensive player, what's their response when they lay a good lick on you and you bounce right off them?
It's just, I don't know, it's just my body. It's my body type, you know, allows me to do it, my strength. So, I mean, it's, hey, I'm still running. This thing, you're trying to hit me as hard as you can. That's great because I need that too because it just bounces me, lights, wakes me up a little bit, gets me going. You know, that's why I love special teams so much. You just run, be physical, be athletic, you know, all the balance. That's probably what helps me most with is my strength, is just my balance coming off of hits and stuff like that.
Chargers, Ravens coming up this weekend. You know, you also mentioned in your Twitter bio, you are, quote, D2 and damn proud. What was it like, or what was life like for you as a Mountaineer?
Definitely had to earn and work for everything, that's for sure. You know, it's a low budget at school. We don't have, you know, much funding up there, so kind of had to make things work as far as weight room and, you know, meals and things like that. So you definitely had to earn everything, which is kind of just, you know, prepare me for this coming as undrafted into the league. It's just like you have everything to prove. And so when I was up there, I was just scratching a claw for, you know, the minimal, basically, you know, just one step up from high school. You know, we don't have a nutritionist and, you know, massage therapist and all these other things. So you got to go out of your way and make sure you get all the things that you need on your own.
Wow, that's hardcore. You know, you mentioned Adrian Phillips. I had him on the show a few weeks back. Like you, he was undrafted coming out of college. We talked about the mentality it takes to make it in the NFL when you're undrafted. Like, I'm curious, what was your mindset when you came out of college?
Yeah, I know. Actually, going back to AP, though, but even last year when I was coming in, he helped me so much just coming in and just making the team, because he was, we had talks in the elevator. That's when we talked about the elevator talk, is what I called it. He'd just tell me, like, look, man, like, you're looking for a special teams role right now. That's just where you're, the position you're in. And so it's you're on scout. I was on scout team, right? And so I'm getting scout team looks, so no one's looking. So I had to stand out somehow. And the way I stood out, I was just running down the field as fast as I could, not letting anyone block me or anything like that. Just started standing out. And so he, shout out to him for helping me. And then just out of college, I just looked at it like, look, you got one shot and you got everything to prove. So don't have any regrets, obviously, and just let it all up on the line, you know. I was going, I call it full try hard, and just trying to make all the plays that I could just to stand out in any way I could.
Full try hard. All right, so it worked, right? It worked. Now you finish up your second season. You averaged more than 5 yards per carry. You had nearly 1,000 yards from scrimmage. So when you look at numbers like that, do you feel like you've proven yourself and that you've arrived, or maybe does that journey never really end?
Yeah, I think that's, as a player, you're always trying to develop your game. And so, you know, always trying to one-up your best year. And maybe another player or something like that. For me, it's just a personal thing. I'm trying to one-up my best year and be more productive on special teams or offense, whatever it may be. And so it's just a forever, you know, as a, any competitor, just forever developing, you know, thing of your game. The time that you say that was good enough and I'm good, that's when you probably start seeing some drop, or your mindset change. You probably should move on to something else. How I see it.
Austin Ekeler, my guest, in terms of full try hard, one last thing. You know, you finished up your degree this past spring after your rookie year. Your head coach, Anthony Lynn, also went back to earn his degree. That was not something that you had to do, much less that quickly. Why was it so important for you to go back and get that degree?
You know, because I had a great opportunity coming out of college to go work in the oil and gas field as a landman. And, you know, obviously I wanted to give this a shot because I thought I had a shot. And my academics and my internship and all that was super important to me. And I had one semester left, and I knew that, you know, possibly if this didn't work out, that, you know, I would have fallen back on that. And so it was important to me just in case, you know, anything happened. I wanted to make sure I had a plan B was the biggest thing.
Good night now!